Well, after 35 years of strict government control over family size, China's one-child policy is coming to an end. Starting tomorrow, families will now be able to have two children. And the change is a strategic one. China has the fastest aging population in human history, with a dwindling proportion of working adults to support them. Dr. Jane Golley is an economist at the ANU's College of Asia and the Pacific, and she studies the costs and benefits of China's one-child policy. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you.
Well, Jane, what difference will this change in policy make to China?
Well, it's very hard to say at this stage. The policy's actually been relaxed since it was almost since it was first introduced in the early 1980s, rural people were up in arms because if they had a girl, that really threatened the farm, and so there were almost riots in the streets, and the policy was relaxed so that if you had a girl in rural areas, you were allowed to keep going, essentially until you got a boy. Even in urban areas, the one-child policy has been maintained until a couple of years ago. They made it possible for couples that were both only children to have another child. And last year, they turned that... Oh, sorry, if they were both only children, they could have a second child. And then last year, they turned that into the rule that if just one of them was an only child, they could then have a second child. So while this is a big change, it's also been a little bit gradual. So they're not expecting the uptake to be huge.
Even with all the exceptions to the rule, though, the one-child policy has had a significant impact on demographics in China. Tell me about that and about the gender imbalance.
Sure. The official line is that the policy itself has reduced China's population by 400 million people. So that's a whopping number. More careful statistical analysis suggests that it's closer to 250 million. So still a huge number. But the difference there is made up by the fact that China's fertility rates would have declined anyway, like they have in all of its neighbours and across the world as its economic development proceeded. So that 250 million can be attributed to the one-child policy alone. It's certainly a massive number.
And it's estimated there'll be 20 million more boys than girls, or more men than women, I should say, in China by 2020. I mean, that's just in a few years' time. That's a big difference.
That's right, and about 30 to 40 million by 2030. Look, the one-child policy is not solely to blame for that, but it's certainly responsible. I mean, to have such a dramatic rising sex ratio, and it has been dramatic. If you look at the figures in the mid-1980s, China's sex ratio at birth is pretty normal. It then shoots up really sharply and peaks at about 119 boys per 100 girls just in the last couple of years, so much so that the government declared it a national priority. The one-child policy plays a part in that, obviously, because it puts what we call a squeeze on fertility, and so family sizes are restricted. But you also need to have a strong son preference, and China's not alone in that. In fact, it's almost universal. And you need to have the ability to detect sex at birth. And that's where General Electric and the West came in, actually, in the mid-1980s, exactly at the time that the gender imbalance starts to rise, and started providing ultrasound technology across the country, which then coincides with a dramatic rise in sex-selective abortion.
And that has already led to consequences in the adult population of a childbearing age, because it's quite difficult for men in some areas in the cities, for instance, to obtain a wife, to attract a woman, because they're competing with so many more men. It's a real issue.
Well, that's right. And as any economist could put it, in a competitive marriage market, it becomes really difficult for men, you know, for those 30 million to find a match. And one of the economic consequences of that, according to some professors at the Columbia University, has been a dramatic rise in saving rates. And it's saving rates among both parents and single boys have been shown across provinces to be much higher than those people coming from larger families. So they're saving up because the pressure on them to provide a house, a car, and to have a good job is extremely high. And of course, what that does is makes most likely the people or the men at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, if I can call it that, are the ones who are going to be left out. It's the poor peasants, and there are stories of villages which are just flooded with single men, and they and their parents are busy building houses and trying to build houses higher than the single men next to them in the distant hope that some woman will return to the village and marry them.
And what about women's rights? Does tomorrow's change in policy address things which have occurred in the past, like forced abortions under a one-child policy?
Forced abortions are probably one of the biggest policy, not a policy change. It's been illegal for many, many years, but there was a crackdown. As soon as they announced the national policy change in 2013, they cracked down that year. That was the language they used. And I think the number I remember reading was something like 16,000 people were fined or arrested for using illegal sex, for using ultrasound for sex selection. So, you know, the numbers can come out pretty big. I mean, they need to be even bigger than that if you're really going to enforce that turnaround. And to put a tiny silver lining on a fairly awful cloud, whilst the abortion ratio went up, what that meant was a big drop in excess female child mortality rates, where China's numbers there were quite horrific compared with global norms. So, you know, lovely morning conversation, but is it probably better to be an aborted fetus than a child who's dropped in a river? And that's an extreme case, but they're certainly out there.
Oh, it's a pretty grim reality there.
Yeah.
Some people are flagging this policy shift to a two-child policy as too little, too late, particularly given the number of working-age Chinese able to support a heavily ageing population. Do you think this has the ability to fix China's looming population crisis?
Take a couple of points up there. One is that I wouldn't call it a crisis. That's a matter of debate, and it remains to be seen. They are aging faster and at a lower level of per capita income than any other country that we've seen before. But I think you really have to trade off and consider some of the benefits of the one-child policy and also ask whether that's the right thing to tackle aging. What happens if you do boost fertility rates? And let's remember that we're not going to boost them probably all that much. They're predicting about between 1 and 2 million extra children a year. So over, let's say, 1.5 million. Over a 10-year period, you're going to have 15 million extra Chinese kids. They're going to be kids, they're dependents, they're youth dependents until they hit the workforce. You know, a lot of them not until they're 20. And so you've got an age dependency problem at the top. I'm not quite sure why anyone would think that tackling that with having youth dependency on the rise at the bottom would be a good idea. I think there are better ways to go about that, and one of them is that they've already implemented is to raise the retirement age. It's been set at 55 for women and 60 for men until just this year, and so putting that up, you know, boosting labour force participation rates, raising education levels and skill levels, mm-hmm. I think are better ways to tackle ageing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jane Golly, thank you very much for joining us, and a happy Lunar New Year of the Monkey to you when that comes around after New Year's Eve.
Thank you. Same to you too.
That was Dr. Jane Golly, an economist at the ANU's College of Asia and the Pacific.